This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrics with Botsang Modimoame Muhilwa. Last week, we were not here because Botsang literally took ill on the day we were supposed to record.
Yeah, well, morning fresh. It was man down. It was the night before, actually.
Hey, you sounded bad.
I was horrible. I've never heard that in my life. I've heard people talk about cold and flu combo.
Yeah.
And 3 days I was off. I was in bed for 3 consecutive days. And yeah, but I've recovered very well.
A lot has been happening in the country while you were dying there.
You know, how painful was it that I wanted to speak about issues?
Yes.
And they were moving, and then there were the Libyans and this and the ANC, what. And I was like, I needed to talk about these things. And unfortunately, the voice was also gone.
Sure. Let's move on. Let's move on to labor laws, courts and failures. And the letter from the EFF.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You see, one of the things that made me to apply my mind before the EFF letter, the EFF, our political parties, former liberation movement, the AZAPO, PAC, and the ANC, they had the labor federations affiliated to them. For example, the ANC had COSATU, which is still their, affiliate. The AZAPO and PAC, they had NACTU and so forth. And the EFF being one of the new political parties that was formed. I mean, EFF is what, 11 years old, years old now. And they never had the affiliate to the Labour Federation.
Sure.
At some stage or during the founding of the EFF, it happened, if you recall, the EFF was founded just after the Barikada massacre.
Mm.
So there was a close working relationship between the EFF and, is it AMCU? They were working very close. AMCU was actually at some stage be seen as the arm of the EFF, by the media. Now, what the EFF has done now, and it's something that I must applaud them for. The EFF, a few years back, they launched what they called a labor desk. And when they launched it, it was to assist the people on the ground, especially youngsters, workers who have been exploited, and that the law is not making provision for them. So you will have problems at work with your labor issues.
Sure.
You could approach the EFF and they would assist you. And they were doing it across the board. You didn't have to be their member.
Mm.
So they were running like a labor federation desk to aid the people, which worked very well. And really, we must give them credit away because it's resolved quite a number of labor issues for the so-called blue-collar workers or low-income earners.
Sure.
Okay, Julius got upset due to the election results, and he said, not anymore, we are only going to do it for those who are EFF people, which is unfortunate for him to say or to do that. Yeah? But I understand, he will say, you've both voted whatever political party, why do you come to ask for help? I understand politically, but it worked. But what they have done now, and I hope this is not being undermined. The EFF has written to Parliament, and they've addressed actually the incoming Chief Justice, Bandisa Maya, to say, as much as labor is at the center of the South African liberation struggle, the workers' rights and all that, the labor courts in South Africa have been the most and understaffed, undermined, not cared for. And they raised something that I was actually not even aware of. And it came to my attention when I read the EFF letter to say, Chief Justice Zondo, which is very disturbing, he was at the helm of the Labour Court for many years. Most of his time he spent at the Labour Court. Yet when he was a chief, well, he's left with few weeks to go now, 2 weeks to go. When he was a Chief Justice, knowing what was the condition of the labor court, he actually neglected. You understand? You were there. You were in the labor court as the judge president of the labor court or a judge in the labor for many years. And when you take power and position, you can correct and address the challenges that labor courts are faced with. You fail to do that. And that's one of his failures. I listened to Justice Zondo when he addressed and he tabled the report to Parliament of the performance of the Department of Justice, or not even the Department of Justice, the judiciary, the third arm of the state. Actually, I must say blatantly, This is the worst performance of the judiciary in the history of the new South Africa. Mm. The judiciary has never performed as bad as it has now. Under from Chief Justice Pius Langer throughout until now, this is the worst performing. And you know, South Africans are going to be quiet about that to say, under Justice Zondo, the third arm of the state, which is the judiciary, has performed worse than any other period in the history of this country. In his report,
How do you rate that performance?
Well, they set targets first of all, and this comes from him. Okay. They set targets to say they will have this number of cases resolved within a certain period. Okay. They could not. Look, he's got the reasons. There are reasons that they gave to say they are understaffed, they are under budgeted. Cases are running for 5-7 years. In that Zuma's case has been running for 17 to 18 years. You understand? So they are under budgeted, they are understaffed. The Labour Court of South Africa has 14 judges permanent, 14 fresh. You are sitting with over 1 million labor cases, and you've got 14 judges. Everybody's acting.
Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. So who do we blame? Political office bearers or the judiciary? The judiciary says the politicians are not giving us money. You understand? And we don't have money. We can't hire judges. We can't appoint. We can't confirm people. I mean, you are sitting with 14 permanent labor court judges. I'm in a labor dispute at the moment myself.
In fact, I was going to say, and you know, the sad thing with the labor issue is more often than not, it's a David and Goliath case. And more often than not, the David is with zero income.
Exactly.
Trying to get justice from what Goliath did. But because everything is stuck in the system, one person is losing here. The one who lost their job or feels like they've been there's an injustice here.
Yeah, but let me tell you where the problem was. The first problem came with organizations like COSATU and Labour Federation. When they, remember, they were part of NEDLAC that sat down and wrote these labour laws. How do you write labour laws that are supposed to protect the interests of the workers? And those labour laws favors the employer, the wrongdoing, the exploitative and the employer. That's the first wrong thing that has happened. And I've experienced it. You know, I've said to people, in my life, I've been to 33 labor cases. You know, and of the 33, about 28 were mine. It was me facing, you know, labor challenges. And in all those instances, I learned something. Do you know that the labor court, it's called an equality court or court of equity. In other words, when the two parties approaches the court, and this is something very interesting that, you know, it has come to reality with me now. When two parties approach the court, the applicant and the respondent, you are equal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So me and my employer, it doesn't matter who did what wrong. When we sit in front of the judge or we present our papers, we are equal. Now, let's use logic. How can we be equal when the employer, it's a mega store or it's a government department with a budget fighting an individual like Botha? In my case at the moment, and I know it's been disputed, and I don't want to go into the merits of my own case.
Yeah.
My employer has spent over $4 million fighting with me.
Sure.
They dragged me to court. I didn't take them to court. I took them to the lower court, which is the CCMA. I won. I got an award. And they are like, no, we are going to challenge that award. So they're dragging me to court. They're spending millions on lawyers, on me, and I don't have an income. Now I must fight this giant with my own. First of all, there's no income.
Yeah.
So somewhere, somehow, I must go and jump the counter or cost the highest or do something in order to can fight this giant. How can that be equality? That's not equality. That's not equity. When they say the labor court is a court of equity, I'm challenging it and I'm saying that is not equity because we are not fighting from the same position or same level.
Absolutely.
We are fighting with giant. We are fighting with an employer who has taxpayers' money. They can hire the best lawyers on earth. That's the first thing. The second thing is this thing's dragged forever.
Sure.
This thing's dragged forever. I mean, I'm sitting in a situation where the labor law says, and this is where the EFF comes in. The labor law says these measures must be completed as speedily as possible.
Yes.
And they even go to an extent of saying, at least within 12 months.
Yeah.
My employer dragged me to court 13 months back.
Sure.
They're still not ready to go to court. You understand?
And they're clearly delaying because they know they've got the legal muscle, but you might not.
Yes. You understand? Yeah, I might not.
So it's not in their interest to submit on time.
Exactly.
Exactly
the point.
To dot the I's and cross the T's, because let's frustrate him in the courts.
And then they, after frustrating me in the courts, they even frustrate the courts. They break the court rules and regulations. They break them. Then they go to court. Guess what the court says? Okay, we see you have broken the rule. You didn't adhere to ABC. Can you please explain to us why didn't you adhere? I mean, imagine. And why am I sitting at that moment? I'm just sitting there on the side when people who break the law come and explain to the court why they've broken the law. We have a situation where a court, in my case in particular, a court issues an order to my employer to say, you are going to do A, B, and C and do it in this time frame, 14 days. No, the employer takes 32 days.
Yeah.
I force them to go and explain to the court why they didn't do it. The court says, okay, we have here to next time do it right. Next time comes, they do it wrong again. They still go back to the labor court to say, although we didn't do it correctly because our client, which is the government, was busy with elections and voting and party. And that's where the laws are unjust.
Sure.
The laws become unjust when they are not taking care of their own rules and regulations. Their courts are failing in South Africa to apply their own rules and regulations. And this is what is causing problems and people taking law into their own hands.
And you have to agree with the EFF that especially labor disputes, they must be resolved speedily.
Speedily. You know, we spoke the other day about the case of the former PRASA CEO. You know, coincidentally, PRASA is one of the agencies of transport. Like, I work for the agency of trans. 3 years back, the CEO of PRASA was dismissed unfairly. And so the court has come to a conclusion to say it was an unfair dismissal. The man must be reinstated and paid back approximately 14 million. Okay? No, they've hired a new CEO. If they would have resolved this matter speedily, you know, it takes about 3 to 6 months to can recruit a person into a position if you follow normal process. They would have resolved this matter within 3 to 6 months. They would have not been in a situation where they are at the moment.
Absolutely.
But I don't think our labor laws are pro the working class. I don't think they care about the workers in this instance. These laws were made because during the apartheid years, people didn't have those labor rights like we are having at the moment. But when the law fails the intended purpose or the people they are supposed to defend and protect, and we're having a problem with that. And to say it's because the labor department or the labor courts do not have resources, they didn't have money. I mean, how can we have money for everything else, but we don't have money for courts, an important court? The labor court is the centerpiece of humanitarian situation in South Africa because it has to do with what? With income. It has to do with employment of people. We are crying and talking about high levels of unemployment, but you still keep people unemployed, not because they can't find jobs or they are unqualified for jobs, but because they are hung up in labor issues that are delaying and taking forever to end. And this is the country where people have slogans like delayed justice is injustice, you understand? Delayed labor processes or delayed, you know, justice processes are injustices.
Justice delayed is justice denied.
Yes, but the courts themselves are doing that.
Sure.
And one cannot blame the judges, you understand, if they are hamstrung by the political office bearers and the budget. But again, I think there's an element of lack of ubuntu in this whole process. You know, there's lack of element of humanity in this process, because fresh, your income, people talk of black taxes. My income, it's not for me and my kids only. It's extended to the grandparents, the extended family, and many other people who are dependent on me.
Sure.
For example, the lady who's cleaning in your house and her children, they're dependent on you because if she doesn't get the salary, your creditor and everything else. So we are not looking at it as a nation. But I think the EFF must be supported in this endeavor. And I think if the incoming Chief Justice Meyer can actually put a little bit of effort in improving the labor courts in South Africa, the way we have done with children's courts. We have done very well as a nation with children's courts. Sometimes we have overdone it by giving children, you know, rights that, that I think sometimes they are beyond reproach. But I think the labor justice system in the country needs to be improved, and we should not rely on unions and political officers. They have no interest in that. Actually, politicians will have more people unemployed so that the people must look up to them for feeding. You know, you must go and clap hands to politicians.
For your 350.
Yes, for your 350. It works for them.
Sure.
Yeah, but yeah. So I think the EFF thumbs up. I hardly praise them, and they are doing very well. And I'm glad that the EFF and Umkhonto we Sizwe Party, they've decided to remain in the opposition benches, because who's going to watch the party girls and boys of the GNU? And I think these two political parties have done very well to remain in the opposition benches.
And remember, even with what happened in Kenya, I said to you, would what happened in Kenya...
I was thinking about you. I was giving you credit for that.
Would what happened in Kenya...
Will it spread?
Would it spread like the Arab Spring did?
Yeah.
And then you look at what's happening in Nigeria.
In England.
And how youth in Nigeria, some of them are saying they're inspired by youth in Kenya.
Yes.
You know
and
what
you
I mean?
You did mention it. I remember you asked that question. Yeah. You asked me, do you think this will spread? And I said, no, I don't think they. We are tamed, especially in South Africa. But look at Nigeria. I mean, whoever thought the youth will rise against a very militant government in Nigeria. And we are seeing it mushrooming everywhere. You know, Traore has controlled and kept Burkina Faso and the Sahel area very well. But I think the youth are, as you're saying, they are resetting the way things have been happening. Youth are rising up and are becoming tired.
And you know, even within a democratic environment, people are saying maybe the system is not working.
Yes. Yes, yes. People are saying that the system is not working. But Fresh, I've said before on this platform that revolutions all over the world were started by two groups, either the working class or the youth. Everywhere.
All
revolutions were started by the working class or youth.
Sure.
And our governments tend to underestimate what youth can do.
Yes, sir.
And if the system fails those that are it's intended to benefit, and then those that are supposed to will say, but this system is not working for us. Mm. Yes, it's democratic, but it's not working for us. Mm. Understand? And again, it's becoming clearer and clearer that democracy is not working for the majority of people, especially in developing countries.
Sure.
It is not. I mean, I wish.
But is there a better system though than democracy?
Fresh.
All the systems will have flaws.
Yes.
But is there something better than democracy that will ensure that people are not abused, that there are no extrajudicial killings, that opposition do not disappear, that money from coffers doesn't disappear?
It disappears in under democracy anyway. But look,
but democracy allows for you to have NGOs. NGOs that can say, this person is illegal.
Yeah, but you have to take care of that. I mean, you look at you are mentioning NGOs as an example. Let's look at Burkina Faso at the moment. What Traore is that? You know, the head of state in that country, as recent as during the beginning of this past week, he for the very first time in 64 years, Burkina Faso has a central bank.
Yeah,
in 64 years, they were never allowed to by France. The former colonizer, do you have a central bank?
Your master tells you what to do.
Yeah. Now they have a central bank. Why do they have democracy? No, they've got a military coup, a leader who is now the leader of state. So it depends on the nature of the country and what the country wants. In a country like South Africa, I think democracy can work in the environment because we are a multi-nation. We are multicultural, multiracial, and all those multi. So it will work that everybody has a voice, but it gets abused as well. You look at NGOs. I think the NGOs, they want to run the government in South Africa. I think they think they are the government, all these NGOs. And even foreign NGOs have taken the government to court and lost. I mean, Tade Aaron Motsoaledi was going to have a heart attack with all the cases he lost at Home Affairs.
But the NGOs are operating within the confines of of the law and what's allowed. Yeah. So what's the problem?
So the problem is our laws. The problem is our laws. We make laws that we can't have laws that allows everybody to do as they wish.
Yeah.
That an NGO funded by a foreign government, and this is where spying on countries comes in, that we have all these NGOs. Ahmed Kathrada, Thabo Mbeki, I've seen them now. They've ganged up. Did you see the letter they've issued? All these NGOs and foundations.
Sure.
They've now come up to say South Africa needs a national
dialogue. Yes.
Instead of politicians sitting in cabinet and deciding that we need to do this, it's NGOs who are saying we need a national dialogue. And why is the Thabo Mbeki, Robert Sobukwe, Ahmed Kathrada foundations realize only now after the ANC has lost the election that we need a national dialogue? Why is it happening now when there's no outright winner? All along, they never call for a national dialogue. President Mbeki has been talking to the ANC as the leader of the ANC, guiding them and telling them that, no, we need to remove Mikodwe out of the ANC and rebuild the ANC. He never called off a national dialogue. So he cared of the ANC more than he cared of the nation.
Yes. In fact, speaking of President Thabo Mbeki, looking at what's been happening in other democracies where ruling parties don't do so well, but for some reason they come back, or you're told the president got 99% of the vote.
Yes. our friend President Kagame.
Remember, President Thabo Mbeki, was it last year, speaking about how the ANC, as in the country, can't afford for the ANC to lose.
To lose, yes.
Because there might be chaos.
Yeah.
Looking at how there hasn't been chaos, surely kudos to South Africa and its democratic maturity. Like in 94, where there was no bloodbath, your ruling party for the last 30 years got 40% of the vote, and there was no chaos,
yes,
as predicted by Thabo Mbeki.
Yeah, but I think President Mbeki was not talking for South Africa, as I said. He was talking for the ANC.
Sure.
The ANC leaders are so, you know, digested into the ANC being the alpha and the omega of this country.
Sure.
They don't see this country without the ANC. And it will happen that we will wake up one day and the African National Congress would have died a natural death.
Are you saying they have a breadwinner syndrome?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly that.
That I'm the breadwinner here.
And even where they did wrong, by the way, for us to have peace transition in 1994, it was not because of the ANC. It was a collective. Sure. It was South Africans have decided we are not going into a war.
Sure.
It didn't take the ANC to that. It took all of us to say we are going to have a peaceful transition.
Sure.
Because another person like the AWB, they tried to do that at some point. They were wiped off. They were removed off the system. You understand? So this mentality of the ANC people thinking that without the ANC, this country is lost. And I don't know what informs that when actually the ANC has misgoverned this country. Likely so. They've done so many wrong things that why would you say they are the alpha and the omega of this country when they have done so much wrong for this country? And I think that's why President Mbeki quickly somersaulted to now call for a national dialogue, because what he predicted that I don't think he was talking about violence.
Sure.
I think he was talking about the collapse of governance and the system if the ANC loses. But South Africans, whether we agree with them or not, whether we are on their side of which political party or not, they came up and they came with a solution which is where we are at the moment.
That
there's functioning, there's governance happening, you know, and it may not be the best for the country, it may not be what we want, but there's something at hand that we can, you know, pick up and say, this is where we are as a nation. I mean, it's not like in the USA where you have two political parties, in the UK where you have three political parties. And it's not that easy. We're sitting with over 50 political parties, and we manage as a nation to can come out of a very complex situation.
Absolutely.
And I think kudos to ourselves as a nation and for the people to accept as well. You know, for the people to say, we lost, even the ANC, we lost, we'll accept it. You understand? And we must give credit to them because for them now to lose over 20 political seats in parliament or 30, it's a lot. And for the new ones to embrace You know, when you look at controversies and Patriotic Alliance, the new ones, to embrace, to say, we are the new kids on the block and we'll occupy our position. And I think the country has done very well politically on that note.
Absolutely. And I think we're done.
Yeah.
Unless there's anything else on your chest.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up is the riots in England.
Oh, in the UK, yes.
In the UK. You know, Fresh, I don't know whether the world is going to call it, Islamophobia.
Ah, yes.
Like they are saying in South Africa, we've got Afrophobia.
Because this started when there was a stabbing?
Yes.
At a Taylor Swift-themed party.
Yes.
And then there was information that, it was a Muslim.
It was a Muslim guy or Arabic guy. Or like. Look, I think it has been bad. Let me tell you what is my view on this issue.
Yeah.
I think the English people, we know they are racist.
Sure.
They are very pompous. I think they've been compressed so much with foreigners coming to England and living there and making life out of that. It's the same as the South African situation. And they have been holding it and suppressing it for so long that it has now exploded because it's done by the youth, by the young ones. If you look at it, it's youth are taking people of color, you understand? But also, I think the British could have stomach having a leader in inverted commas of Indian origin.
Or Sunni, yes.
Sunni, you understand?
Or Sunak.
Yes.
Rishi.
For the last 4 years.
Yeah.
They've been sitting with, in inverted commas, an Indian.
A foreigner
who's a prime minister. I think that didn't sit very well with them. And the Americans are being faced with that situation. Look at what the Americans did when Barack Obama won second term and he had to go. They knew that Donald Trump is bad news for them.
Yeah.
But in order to punish the Democrats for bringing a black Obama in.
Is what you think happened?
That's what happened there. Yeah. That's what happened. Mm. That's why immediately after Trump's first term, then the Democrats were back. Mm. Now the Democrats are taking off a black person, a lady for that matter, to become the first woman.
Who's half black, half Indian.
Yeah. No, they are not going to get away with it. So that's what happened in England. It's the racism. It is the Islamophobia that is happening there in England. And I looked at some of the videos. I think even the police, when I look at the videos, my own observation, they are treating this with kids' gloves. You will see in some videos, the police are in the vicinity. A person gets attacked and is now being kicked and beaten by 10, 12 people. Only when that person is down on the ground, the police will come running to rescue that person.
Honestly, I think the police in England are as scared of those knife-wielding youth as everyone else. I don't want to get stabbed.
But what are the police existing for? So can they stab as citizens or residents of a country or tourists instead of you as policemen? Police are supposed to be there to protect. But I think what is happening in England, it's historical. They have put this thing under pressure. It's peer pressure. Mm. It has now exploded and has got out of hand.
But do you not think it's right in line with what's been happening in a lot of Europe, where a lot of right-wing politicians are starting to make headway because people are sick and tired of the influx of foreigners, the influx of refugees. Again, it goes back to politics of the stomach and resources. That, I mean, you look at some European countries where politicians are very clear that I'm anti-immigrant, I'm anti-immigration, and they're winning. Don't you think people generally on the planet are getting sick and tired of, we can't look after ourselves, but we must look after other people also?
I think that's the general, trend that is happening, not only in Europe. I mean, I've used South Africa as an example.
Sure.
It's happening like that to say that the resources to feed nations and the people are becoming limited resources. And now we have to share with others. But also,
And why does it become such a big issue when South Africa wants to deal with that issue of the influx? But when other African countries do it, it happens quietly.
Yeah.
When Zimbabwe takes a truckload of immigrants back to East Africa.
To East Africa,
It happens quietly. When Botswana takes a truckload of Zimbabweans back to Zim, it happens quietly. Life goes on. The minute South Africa wants to even just say, hey, Botswana, we need to talk. There's an NGO that says, why do you want to talk to Busan?
Yeah, no, but fresh. It also depends on the nature. South Africa became the last country in Africa to be, in inverted commas, liberated.
Yeah.
And it's been seen as a wealthy country,
sure,
with resources and opportunity.
Sure.
We are being seen as that. So we'll obviously occupy the media space and noise will come out because of that.
Is it still that, or is it now being seen as Baba Lahlile? We can go in as we please, we can do as we please, we can spit at our police, we can operate drug dens right next to police and it's okay.
Or inside the police station. No, but again, it's our system. Our system, and we as human beings, we have allowed that to happen.
Mm.
We had a deputy minister of police, I don't know what happened, his career was short-lived, who said, where have you seen, and people were saying it's xenophobic.
Yeah.
You were talking about Hillbrow that time.
Sure.
Where have you seen a whole city or town being taken over by foreigners?
Mm.
And that has happened. I mean, when you look at Hillbrow, it has been taken over by foreigners in South Africa. But I think we were too laxed as a nation.
Mm.
We didn't push the government to enforce the immigration laws. We didn't do it. Now the damage is done.
Mm.
Illegal foreigners are already in the country.
But it's not. But it's not irreversible, though.
No, it's not.
And I say this again: the fact that Giuliani was able to clean up New York, although some might not have agreed with his methods,
but it worked.
There was political will to clean up New York.
Yeah.
There is no reason why downtown Jersey cannot be cleaned up.
No.
There's zero reason.
There is. Well, let's hope Herman Mashaba may be coming back, since he has got into bed with the ANC in Joburg, and it may happen. We can do it. There must be a political will. There must be a drive to say, in South Africa, we will arrest and deport illegal foreigners. It can be done. There must be a political will. Whether the world will make noise or will be angry with us, it should be immaterial.
I'm at a point where I'm thinking people see South Africa as a low-hanging fruit in terms of those ones, we can tune them rubbish if we want. We can accuse them of shit if we want.
Lawlessness.
But when other countries enforce their laws, nobody bats an eye.
Yeah.
Nobody makes noise.
I agree with you, Fresh.
Something has got to give, Busan.
But we don't have politicians with backbones.
And unfortunately, if it doesn't happen at a political level,
we cannot do anything with
the people will make it happen. Yes. And that is my fear.
That's the danger. The danger is the people will take the law into their hands. The people will start pushing for us. And we have seen the xenophobic attacks.
Mm.
We have seen attacks on foreigners happening in Deep Slot, in Soweto before. And it is because people are, for lack of a better word, heartful with the government failing to do what they're supposed to do. And by the way, there's a socio-political impact on the lives of people.
Mm.
As you mentioned, the straining of the resources, the limited resources that the country has.
Mm.
When a normal South African on the streets of Soweto or of Alexander sees that he is sharing the clinic or the hospital with a foreigner, whether legal or illegal, what comes later naturally into that person's mind is, if this person was not here, my sister would have been number one on the queue. You understand? You look at employment in restaurants. I mean, I can tell you, my majority of restaurants in South Africa, people have created the impression that South Africans are lazy. They don't want to work there. No. I don't think that's the issue. The issue is these employers of low-income sectors like restaurants and farms, they will employ foreigners because they are accepting any, peanuts as salary.
They can pay them below minimum wage,
yes,
but they can't run and complain to anyone.
They can't run and complain because they're illegal in the country or they're foreigners. Mm. And that's where the situation is. The government is not dealing with, for example, the employer in this case, in this instance.
Yeah.
But because I'm saying this because you don't see that in white-collar employment. You don't find it in professors at universities, in bankers, or in CEO of organizations, that you find illegal, people there. Mm. It's one or two cases that we have had in the country.
Mm.
And it's because the system is not taking care of what is on the ground.
Sure.
And the people on the ground, your fear is that the people on the ground will wake up and take the law into their own hands.
Yeah.
And that will be chaos.
Absolutely.
That will be fresh. When you look at that, we have Libyans who are having military training in South Africa. Mm. Obviously, there's arms there.
Yeah.
When you look at when there was xenophobic attacks in the yesteryear,
mm.
how the so-called foreigners were armed in order to defend themselves. We have had police raids in the so-called Pakistani shops.
Sure.
And they find rifles.
Yeah.
You know, the other day, police raided a foreign national shops, and they found rifles and guns in those shops. So you can imagine if violence erupts in their country, and foreigners have to defend themselves because they are under attack. What chaos will be faced with?
Absolutely.
And you know, I think our government in enforcing the law must up its game. We have to, especially in cities like Joburg, we have to enforce the law. And there's nothing wrong in enforcing the law. It's not xenophobic. It's not against foreign nationals. I mean, look at how the Zamas, the so-called Zamas.
It's you know, it's become about lawlessness and how do I put this? There are laws.
Enforcement.
Let's work within the confines of the law.
Yes.
If you're unable to do that, you should not be a part of that society.
Exactly.
Full stop.
Exactly.
It's actually as simple as that. But because we've become so lawless and we don't care.
And we wait
we
for
do,
crisis.
We do what the hell we want.
We wait for things to be out of hand, to be crisis. You understand? Too?
Yeah.
I mean, the other day I saw the police commissioner of Gauteng being interviewed about, they call it Operation Valamgoti or something like that. To find and I remembered your story of that village where your ironing lady lives. It's a community on its own. These people are actually running their own municipalities, their own courts,
you know,
and all that.
And you know, it's a whole community in terms of if I do you wrong, it's an informal settlement.
Yeah.
If I do you wrong, Putsan, there's a...
A court, a judicial process.
There's a process where you will be fined if you're found guilty.
Yeah.
Or you'll be expelled from that community.
From that community.
Or your mukuku will be burnt down in that community.
Yes.
And this is happening right here.
Right
here outside North Riding.
This week, I heard the provincial commissioner of police saying that, to say these people are running their own societies,
yes,
their own law enforcement. And I'm like, Fresh told me about this.
I told them about this 2 weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, and the police commissioner this week was talking about it.
Yeah.
To say we have communities, they have their police station, they've got their
courts. There's mini Oranias in a lot of informal settlements. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's mini Oranias in informal settlements.
And it's a serious problem that the police can't even go to some of the areas. They had to ask the army to beg them in order to go into those areas. Lawlessness, complete lawlessness in the country.
Or we could learn from them on how to actually organize yourselves.
That lawlessness, no, we shouldn't promote that.
I was speaking to another lady, just to show you the lawlessness that is allowed to happen. I was speaking to another lady. She's from Lesotho.
Yes.
They murdered her brother.
In South Africa?
Yeah. Their brother was a Zamazama.
Okay.
Other Zamazamas murdered her brother and then delivered his body parts to Lesotho and dropped them off at the front door.
So they crossed the borders with body parts
with
and all
body that. Parts and delivered them to their front door. And then they found out who the people were that murdered the brother. And then the community got involved. And then they went and sorted them out. But it's wild out there, Busa. It's wild, wild, wild.
Let's bring the army to our people. I think we should bring the army into the communities. In order to clean up, we must, you know, Joburg has to be cleaned up. Otherwise, this place, last week, the mother of my daughter sent me a message. Actually said it back. She said, a person has just been shot in front of me.
Yeah.
In Joburg, downtown.
Yeah.
She was working and somebody just got shot and marked, and it's okay, we can live with that. I mean it's a challenge that people are just being shot. I've seen videos of people being robbed downtown Joburg and people are passing by as normal.
Life goes on.
Nah, that's a sad state of affairs. But as much as I've said it before, Herman Mashaba he was just from a political party that was not being favored.
Yeah.
But he had a plan. He knew what he wanted to do. This thing of having buildings that belong to the state, that nobody's managing them and controlling them, it's breeding criminality.
You know, if we could suspend some of these NGOs just for a month, and have a military operation
and enforce the law,
where you go building to building,
yes,
and just clean up. Just building to building and clean up.
Fresh, we will do well. These NGOs, we don't even have to suspend them. Ignore them. The day they go to court, yeah, you would have cleaned the city. Mm. Forget that these NGOs will go to court. They'll enforce the law.
There'll be an interdict for the
next
day.
If
no, by the time you're done with building two, there'll be an interdict.
Then you must not continue to enforce the law.
Yeah.
Break the law. You see, this is where I said earlier on, our courts, if they are failing to defend those who are intended to be beneficiaries of the law, if the courts are going to allow police not to go into a suspected drug house, somebody interdicted to say there's human beings there, there's children there, you cannot go.
You know, even in some of these buildings, there's informal settlements inside the building.
Yes. That's why that building, that bend, and over 70 people died. So many people died because there were sharks inside the building.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge we are faced with. The lawlessness is a problem. But I think South Africans must read. You referred to the former mayor of New York.
Giuliani.
They must go and read that book. Actually, I got it as a gift from a former diplomat, the late Mr. Moyo. He bought me that book. And the chapter that I liked there was the broken window syndrome.
Yes.
You know, that part of saying, New Yorkers, stop complaining about New York State. The fact that you've got a broken window in your apartment and you are not fixing it, it's just where the, because that broken window, what do you do with it? You start throwing garbage.
Exactly.
Fix the window.
Yeah.
Then you will not be able to throw things through the window.
Give a damn about your immediate environment. You start giving a damn about your larger environment.
Exactly.
But the fact that we eat our Streetwise 2 at the taxi rank and you throw the box right here.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's normal. It's okay.
And it's normal.
It's okay. I've seen people will jump a dustbin, which is empty, and throw garbage next to the dustbin.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge we are sitting with as a society. We are destroying our own country. And you know, there's a Setswana saying, eat hard a mood.
Sure.
You know, if you don't love yourself and you don't take care of yourself, there is no way you will take care of the society.
Let's fix the broken windows, and then we'll start giving a damn about the doors and the yards and the buildings.
Despite Jeep, something nice has come out of America, the broken window syndrome. I like that.
But I think we're done. I think we talk a lot, but I think because we missed each other last week.
Yeah, it felt weird. It felt very weird that last week I was in bed and we didn't have the show.
Yes,
I want to hear what the followers and viewers are going to say.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I haven't checked anything. I haven't seen why are they, whether they are complaining.
They're upset. They're upset.
Yeah. Are they upset?
Yes, sir.
Ouch.
Where do we find you on social media?
Botsangm@gmail.com and 082-485-9100 for bookings. And then on the social media handles, it's @Botsangm.
Thank you, as always, for being a part of #Politrix on Wow, What a Week. Hopefully, you enjoyed this two-part series. We might start doing more two-part series, depending on how much stuff there is out there. Coming to you from downtown Johannesburg, we are out at Amped Studios. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Pezulu Works, Trevor and his gang. They're responsible for making us look good because they do cinematography. They are our videographers and cinematographers. So if you're looking at turning your wedding or your family event into a movie, Pezulu Works will sort you out. Shout out to our executive producer, Keletso Modisekeng, and our show producer, Thabiso Sikwane. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.